Welcome to Unveiled, the HPD podcast where we dive into the world of policing. I'm your host today, Captain Michelle Roan. Today, we're joined by Lieutenant Ashley Jenneret and Officer Maria Spence.
Hey, how are you today?
Good, how are you?
Good.
So we have different hosts today.
Yes, we're used to seeing the chief.
That's right, we are. But we decided to switch it up and have it be all women today.
Best decision HPD probably has made with this podcast.
I all agree. Women crew. Totally agree.
Yes, okay, I'll agree to it. Not that, you know, our male counterparts aren't any less.
That's right.
They're pretty awesome as well.
Right, we're just better, so.
And highly entertaining, clearly.
There you go.
So, LT and Spence, we all work together on the same side of the city, so that's pretty cool. A little shout out to the Chesapeake sector.
Yes. So,
shameless plug there, but we also work together on the 30 by 30 committee.
Yes.
So recently, Chief Weidman signed the 30 by 30 pledge, along with hundreds of other agencies across the United States. So we are now pledging to have 30% of our workforce be represented by women by 2030. So what a better time to have a podcast with all women.
Absolutely.
Than right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I definitely think we are moving in the right direction in trying to get more women. I could say I actually never saw law enforcement in my future when I was growing up. I always think it's funny that I've ended up as far as I have. But again, I think I made a great career choice. And I'm sure there are many other women out there that don't see this as a career. Or let me change that. It's many who could see this as a career, but don't actually know how to navigate their personal lives with the world of policing being in this male-dominated field. I know that we all have families, so I'm not sure how you guys are impacted or your families are impacted by the decision to be in law enforcement, but I will say it does tend to be a little bit more difficult, I believe, for us.
I think so, too. We had a snow day on Monday, and the city was on delay, you know, two-hour delayed opening, and my husband travels a lot for work, and there was no school. I was like, what am I going to do with my kid? Yeah. Because I have to go to work too.
Right.
And so it definitely becomes a balancing act when I think a lot of times just the general expectation in any workforce, not just policing, is that, well, school is shut down or there's a holiday or, you know, a natural disaster and the mom's going to be the one that stays home with the kids. But that can't be the case for us, you
right.
know, because people are relying on us to show up, not just the city, but our coworkers. They need us. You know, you're a leader. You lead a whole group of people and your coworkers need backup. So there's an expectation that we're going to come to work. That's difficult, I think, sometimes.
It can be. What have your experiences been?
Being a newer officer, you guys have been here for a while, but just being a newer officer and not seeing many females in this department, but the longer that I've been here, and I want to say the past 5 years, that has increased, which is really nice to see. Makes me feel good inside to see women in like a supervisor position. You know, now I have Corporal Lawler and LT, and you as well as my captain, so it's nice to see that. It's something that pushes me forward to do better for myself as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It is very difficult. When we talk about families, so I have children, of course, and just being an officer in a leadership role and then at home life, I have a daughter who went through a period of time where she was sick and in and out of the hospital. And it was so difficult for me in trying to, I don't want to say make a decision to be a mom or an officer. I'm not saying that at all. But in knowing that my time needed to be there with her, but unfortunately still worried about work because I feel like as a woman, we tend to feel we need to do a lot more just to show that we are worthy of these positions and worthy of our time here. And, you know, just to get that respect from our male counterparts. So, you know, my daughter, while she was in and out of the hospital, of course, I have a husband at home as well. And my daughter was not concerned with him at all. It was, Mom, you're going to be at the hospital. You're staying here with me, right? You're going to stay overnight. You're going to be here when I wake up in the morning. And Dad can just go on to work. And, you know, it wasn't that same feel. And that's what our kids tend to look for. Like you said, that just mom yeah. to do it all, and mom to take care of the house while mom is still out here trying to figure out how am I also going to lead this group of people. So
yeah,
it definitely has been a journey, one that I have loved, but a journey in navigating all of that.
So you said that you didn't initially see yourself in law enforcement. How did you come about to apply and to be a police officer?
Nosiness. Okay. I'm nosy. So actually, I'm a true Hamptonian. I grew up in Hampton. I grew up on Chill Road, graduated Hampton High School, graduated Hampton University. I mean, you can't really get any more Hampton than that. So Hampton all my life. And law enforcement just wasn't what I saw for myself. But there was a time when I was looking for, I needed a job. Mm-hmm. And HPD happened to be hiring, and they were hiring for an information clerk under our communications, like dispatch unit. And Chief Wyman hired me.
Uh-oh.
And Chief Wyman hired me and also said, you probably aren't going to be here very long, because I was very timid, you know. You don't know me well. I mean, you know, in time, in being here, I definitely have opened up more, but I didn't talk a lot, kept to myself. And I am also one that takes it as a challenge.
Right.
So.
Yeah, if you tell me I can't do something, I'm going to prove you wrong.
Exactly. And I absolutely know Spence is the same way with her working for me. If you tell her she can't do it, believe me, she's going to do it.
Right.
One of the best informal leaders that we have on our shift. But I ended up getting that position, and I would listen to the radio, but I'm only hearing what's being dispatched. I'm not out there, of course, seeing what the officers are doing. We didn't have BWCs. It was nothing that would let me know what the officers were experiencing. So I decided to do a ride along.
Mm-hmm.
Did the ride along, and the next day I filled out an application to be an officer. And so I went through that process, and in all my time here and the different things that I have done just through my career and as well in the community, I do a lot within the community in Hampton. I'm very vested in the city I live in, but I realized that policing is a calling. Mm-hmm. And we don't always know it at first, but I feel like my calling has been to serve others. Mm-hmm. Everything that I look back that I have done to include in this job, in this career field, and what I've done in the community is just serving others. And I absolutely think when it's time for me to retire and move on from here, I'm going to find something that has me serving others. So I was called into this position without knowing, and I'm thankful for that.
So it was all because Chief Wyman told you you couldn't?
Oh, because Chief Wyman told me I couldn't, and here
like
I am.
20 years later, you're still proving him wrong.
I'm still proving it.
That's amazing. How did you get into this, Spence?
So at the time, my husband was actually deployed overseas, and my best friend, Sabrina, she was like, hey, I want to, she was actually already working for Hampton, but she was like, hey, do you want to go for the police department? They're hiring. And I was like, sure, why not? And in the military or something in the police world was something that I always wanted to mm-hmm. do. But being young, I got married very young. And mm-hmm. we had a family. And, you know, with him being in the military, I couldn't go do mm-hmm. what I wanted to do because someone had to be home with the kids. So I took the opportunity. And actually, Chief Wyman was also in my panel. And I'm here today, and I do agree with LT that policing is a calling. A lot of times people who want, and I encourage everyone to apply, but a lot of times when people apply, I don't think they mm-hmm. know exactly mm-hmm. what we do or what we go mm-hmm. through. They see what the TV shows them and what movies shows them, and it's not always cool stuff. It's a lot of paperwork. Mm-hmm. And right. I mean, like 10 seconds of cool equals like 2 days of paperwork.
It's true.
But that shouldn't stop you. It's a great job, and it's very rewarding most of the time. It does weigh heavy on you on some days, but, you know, you lean on each other. I'm lucky we have a good shift.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the, you know, if one of us needs something or we need to talk to someone, we talk to each other. Mm-hmm. So we walk ourselves mm-hmm. through that. But it is a calling. Like I said, not a lot of people really know what we respond to. They think it's just high priority calls like shootings and mm-hmm. homicide and robberies, but people call us for the smallest things. And not saying small because it's not important, but compared to high priority sure. calls like that, But small things like, hey, there's moth balls in my yard that my neighbor keeps throwing, like civil stuff like that. And we still handle it. And a lot of people actually don't know that. So, but it's a good feeling, whether it's something that small to something super, super big or super high stress, that I get to help someone at the end of the day. So
there you go.
It's okay. Rewarding.
Well, Kat, how did you get into it? I don't know if you remember, but when I first started on shift on midnight,
we were together.
We were together.
On midnight shift.
On midnight shift.
Oh, yes.
So that's where we started.
Now you guys are back together.
Yeah.
Back together.
That's where you started. I had come from the Chesapeake side. And then I think I'd gone to the BID for a little while, actually, the Business Improvement District. And then I ended up on night shift with you. And it was really fun. That was my first taste of night shift, where I learned that all the crazy calls come in after midnight. And it's a great shift.
We had good times.
We had a great time.
How did you get into law enforcement?
So I come from a long line of firefighters, so it just seemed natural that I would be a cop. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, I really do come from a long line of firefighters, but I went away to school initially to be a communications major because I wanted to do investigative journalism. And then I realized that it was really more the investigative part that I was interested in, and 9/11 happened, and that's what everybody was doing then. They were joining the police department, they were joining the fire department, they were joining the military. And so I had already changed schools and changed majors to criminal justice. And as soon as 9/11 happened, I came and turned in my application and was like, you know what, I'll figure out this whole school thing after I get this job. And I did, and I ended up coming here in 2002 and graduating eventually. It just took me a lot longer than I had anticipated because I was going to school part-time while I worked here, but it's been really fun. I mean, every day's different, and I think that's what I love the most about it. It is rewarding. It's a different kind of rewarding now than it was. I mean, I guess it's been rewarding differently in each position that I've held here. The rewarding part now is when you all succeed and like watching the successes that you guys have. And I try to send emails and tell you that I'm proud, and it might seem really cheesy and corny, but I genuinely mean that when I send those to you, because I see the hard work that you all are doing and that the officers do every day. And without you all, like none of the command staff, we don't have a job without you guys. And so the rewarding part for me now is celebrating your successes, because then that means I'm succeeding too. And so I agree with you both that it is incredibly rewarding.
Absolutely.
So you guys mentioned the 30 by 30. I know you're both on the committee, so I was wondering if you guys can enlighten me more about that program that we're having.
So 30 by 30 is a national movement or a pledge for law enforcement agencies to have 30% of their staff be women by 2030. And the reason is because right now, and for decades really, women have only represented 12% of the sworn staffing in law enforcement agencies across America. And, you know, yes, our male counterparts bring just as much to the table as we do, but we bring different things to the table. We have a different skill set than men do a lot of times, and those bring a lot of value. You know, we a lot of times are excellent communicators, calm and level-headed thinkers, strategic, long-term. And so we want to recognize those things and find ways in police organizations to make it more appealing for women to join. So small steps like taking policies and changing verbiage from manpower to staffing. That's low-hanging fruit, really easy stuff to do. But other things like looking at promotional processes, looking at position assignments, and we just redid our policy for that. But making sure that those types of processes are fair across the board to everyone that would be competing in it or participating, because there are underlying biases, and I know you've taught that class for years, and there are things that you don't really recognize until a whole bunch of different eyes from with different perspectives take a look at it and really dive into it and decide that there's changes that are valuable that would make the workforce more appealing to females.
I would agree. One of the biggest things I think that we would be able to do, because of course we've had our first meeting and we've discussed some of those things, just kind of going around the room and getting everybody's experience, some of those things mm-hmm. that we may have had issues or concerns with. But one of the biggest things I think that came out of that as well is just the example, just having representation mm. of women out there. I think that when you look at just maybe TV shows or even within our own communities, again, because we are the minority, we're not seen, and we want to make sure that we mm-hmm. are being seen. When people see us, we talked about the fact that it's like a unicorn at times when mm-hmm. people see a female officer, because they will be, we have children, we have adults, they're like, I've never seen a female officer before. A female has never responded to this complaint or in my school or whatever the case is, because of course we have our SROs. But again, I think representation matters. So even things like this, so I say HPD is great. We're always finding ways to just improve in every aspect of the word. So we are looking at representation, just again, getting us out there more, recruiting, mm-hmm. Finding those different things that we can improve upon, child care again, and I hate to keep going back to family, but that tends to be what hinders women the most in joining law enforcement, just questioning what's going to happen with my family. So, you know,
yeah,
it's been good. Hopefully we'll have some good stuff to bring to the table for the next meeting.
Well, I'm excited. I know as women, when we show up on scene, and like you said, there's a different type of skill set that sure. we mm-hmm. typically use. I know when I show up on scene, sometimes men tend to talk to me nicer, and I kind of use that to my advantage mm-hmm. because I yes. really don't like fighting people. Like, I don't want to escalate, so I'd rather talk to people. So it's nice showing up and being able to have a conversation and then having them calm down, and then it turns out, you know, going the best way possible versus the other way.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've seen that with your body camera footage, because I have to watch. I have to, yeah. So I'm watch. Sorry. No, I like the all the use of force, all the pursuits, you know, everything mm-hmm. that gets put into Blue Team that I have to review. You are always the calm. So mm-hmm. I don't Absolutely. Know if you probably don't even notice it because you're in it. But when you show up on scene, even your male counterparts, your colleagues, they calm down. You show up. They calm down.
It's nice.
It's really
that's nice
a
because
really awesome
I don't feel
see.
It when I'm on scene. I feel like my brain's going 100 miles a minute, so I don't notice any of that. And I'm just like, okay, well, let's talk it out. What can we do to help?
They look to you mm-hmm. and your presence, and sometimes you'll say, "Hey, come here. Let's talk about this, and let's calm down." And I've seen you, you know, pull officers away from something when they're getting too elevated and maybe the communication starting to break down between them and the citizen, and you'll intervene and be like, "Hey, let's go over here for a second." And they just, yeah, it's just your presence.
She does it.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. A very great job. And even after, I want to say, when we come into lineup, mm-hmm. after we've had an incident, or it doesn't even have to be a major incident, but where she has noticed something on scene where you know, maybe she needed to pull somebody aside, she always has something to give in our lineups, which are of course our meetings of the officers before we go out. And it's always a gem. "Hey, remember we responded here last night and this happened, but we probably could have done this."
Yeah.
Or "Remember, if this thing happens, we might want to do this." So, you know, I absolutely appreciate that. With her being there, and she's also one of our training officers, mm-hmm. so responsible for training some of our newer officers coming in. How is that, being a female training officer?
It's an experience. It's definitely eye-opening, because I, you know, when you experience something, you're like, okay, I'm going to take the good parts mm-hmm. of this experience and put it in the way I do things. And so I try to do that, and I want to keep doing that, but not everybody learns the same. Mm-hmm. So it's like a wall sometimes. And I'll sit there and I've asked, you know, my trainees, like, "Hey, is there a way for me to make this a better experience for you? Because this is your mm-hmm. learning. This is your world. Mm-hmm. I need you to learn as much and as fast as possible." So that's a little challenging, because not everyone speaks that same language, mm-hmm. but, you know, you get through. And I have other training officers on scene that has had more trainers than trainees than that I've had, and they, you know, they help me out. We help each other out. If there's a time where they can see that, hey, maybe she needs a break, we'll switch out, mm-hmm. and they'll step in and build and try to explain it in a different perspective that maybe they'll understand, and I do the vice versa with their trainees. So all in all, it comes together as a shift, but yeah, it's an experience in itself.
But to come in and give those nuggets or those gems, as you said, to the shift, and then to have the maturity to recognize that you don't know everything about the person sitting next to you, and to say, I'm here to train you, and I know of a way, but it may not be your way. It may not be a way that you are able to receive effectively. How can I best instruct you? It's just, that's one of the many things mm-hmm. that women bring, and in my opinion, I think that we bring like a small element of vulnerability sometimes mm-hmm. to come into lineup and say, hey, we could have done this a better way, and this is what we could have done, and this is maybe the risk that we had in doing it the way that we did it. But that's a really powerful thing, because that's how we learn, and that's how we grow, exactly. and that's how we get better, and that's how we keep all of our egos in check. Mm-hmm. And so I love that you do that for your shift. I always tried to do that as a sergeant on midnight shift. If we had anything, I'd come in the next day and be like, this is the thing I screwed up. Mm-hmm. And the minute that you acknowledge as a leader that you've screwed something up, everybody else in the room is more willing to say, well, I did this wrong, and I could have just done this better too.
Right.
Because they follow that lead and that example. So I love that you're setting that example on your shift.
Well, I do want to say, I think a lot of it comes down, like you said, you were a sergeant. When you were a sergeant, you know, acknowledge the mistakes that you made, and a lot of times we're our worst critics, mm-hmm. right? But just, you know, from you, from lieutenant, from the sergeants all the way down, I think you guys do a great job holding us accountable and, you know, giving us that floor to be able to speak freely and discuss what's on our mind and how we could have done things differently, or, hey, this is an idea. And now, and especially with the ever-changing world of policing, mm-hmm. I think it helps out a lot with us junior officers and or more senior officers. So I thank you guys. Ooh, we appreciate it.
We appreciate you.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I have a question for you.
Okay.
With you being in executive leadership, of course, I aspire to be mm-hmm. captain or so one day. Mm-hmm. What would be your advice, or not only just your advice, but what your experiences have been? I mean, you've been here longer than the both of us, mm-hmm. and you know, you have been in leadership role longer than us. What has that experience been, and the advice you have for us in trying to get there?
So I would say just always be authentic. Mm-hmm. It's okay to disagree with people that outrank you and people that you outrank, mm-hmm. but how you communicate and how you're able to push back is the most important part. You know, you don't want to be the professional jerk or the bully at mm-hmm. work. That's not okay. But a lot of times we'll see people who seem like chameleons. You know, it depends on who the chief is or who their boss is, and they just sort of
yes.
try to act different every time. But I think that's exhausting and that's hard, and I frankly just don't have the mind bandwidth to try and do that. So I just try to be authentically who I am, and if I have an opinion on it, I try to share it as professionally as possible and usefully, you know.
Right.
I don't want to just throw something out just to do it, but I think that would be the best advice, because, you know, good leadership recognize a good idea. Mm-hmm. And good leadership will listen to an idea, even if it isn't the best idea. You know, you're just like, well, thank you for sharing that. You know, we're not going to do that, but I appreciate at least you coming forward and saying something and speaking up. You know, it's bold to do that. So mm-hmm. I'd say be bold and be authentic would probably be my best advice.
Thank you. Thank yeah. you.
Yeah. And like I said before, you guys kind of like, that goes with what I was just saying. You guys let us be ourselves. And, you know, of course, we remain respectful with you guys, but mm-hmm. you allow us to speak freely mm-hmm. and let us recognize, you know, versus like berating us. Mm-hmm. But you let us recognize what we can improve on and talk to us instead of, you know, having that, hey, that punishment right away. Mm-hmm. It's like more of a talk and eye opening. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people learn better that way than, and with less like negativity mm-hmm. and, boosts your morale altogether.
Yeah, sure. Like, perfection should never be the standard. I'm not perfect, so why would I put that off on somebody else? I think if you recognize that people are going to make mistakes and you talk about it and you figure out why and you figure out how to not do it again, then I think that you just move forward in that mm-hmm. way, and harping on something or, you know, crucifying people over and over again isn't really productive. But yeah, I agree. And I love differing opinions too. Like, I know my own opinion. Why would I want to surround myself with people that think like me? Mm-hmm. I want to ask someone else who doesn't think like me what they think, because that's going to show me what I'm missing.
Right.
And where my blind spots are and what maybe I haven't considered in the past. So I like gathering other perspectives.
I think that kind of goes along with what you said, where women just bring in that different skill set. And, you know, what you're talking about, just allowing you guys the space to speak freely, be yourselves. Not saying, again, that men don't do this, but I think as women, that's just a part of our DNA. Just, you know, again, that motherly instinct, having a little more compassion, looking at things from that different aspect, which is why I think that women make better police officers. I'm just going to say that. I mean, even along with what Spence has said when she talked about going out to a scene and you watching BWC and seeing how she can de-escalate, I think because women tend to be usually better communicators, we go to a scene and it's easier for us to de-escalate versus our male counterparts. They might not intentionally be escalating anything, but it could happen when you are bringing that testosterone into an already, you know, I don't know what word I'm looking for, forgive me, but, you know, and just to a chaotic scene. So again, I think that helps. Even the example you gave of something being small, my neighbor's throwing mothballs in my yard, which doesn't seem major, but we have seen small things like that escalate into some major things. And I think just having the right person on scene that's able to de-escalate that situation, that again seems like anybody should be able to do, that's not always the case. So again, yes, I'm going to continue to say that we are better officers for that reason. And, you know, again, it goes back to, I feel like, just a part of being in our DNA. So having more women in the workforce, I think, absolutely would benefit all of the police departments.
Sure. And the community.
And the community.
100% of the people in the world have moms.
Yes.
Like, everybody has a mother. And, you know, 9 out of 10 of them like their mom. And so...
I love you, Mom.
Right. I think that makes us... relatable, you know, because people do, they see mom in us, even if all of us don't have kids, which all of us don't have kids. But I think just the femininity, the people see that, the community sees that, and there's always something in your mind playing, every little boy is taught don't hit a girl, right? I think kids are still taught that these days. I hope so. And they still see that. I've had people that I've arrested that were like, I couldn't hit you, you're a girl. And I'm like,
it's like, thank you.
Thank God. You know?
Right.
But that's just human nature. It's just the way that history, that's just how it goes.
Right.
And so it does play to our benefit a lot of times because, I mean, the reality is, I'm 5'3". If I had to fight everybody, I'd be in real trouble. I probably wouldn't be in this job anymore. I'd be beat up and I'd have broken bones and I, you know, wouldn't be able to walk. But we learn to effectively communicate to counter physical strength or size. And I think, thankfully, a lot of times that good communication comes a little bit more naturally, maybe.
Right.
Perhaps because we've had to sharpen it our whole lives. I'm not sure. But you bring that into policing and to law enforcement. And I think that it's like our little superpower. If we were like, I'm finished.
One thing that like stood out for me from the academy though, when LT Sheck, Mama Paula, came in and she quoted the movie. I don't know what movie it was, but she was like, you know, be nice until it's time not to be nice and then be nice again.
Roadhouse.
Is it Roadhouse? But I have lived my policing career through that because I'm going to be nice, but then the minute it starts escalating, I'm like, all right, we're going to take care of this and then we're going to go back to being nice.
Right.
Oh, you're going to tell her that,
really well.
That you hold it.
I'm serious. It's like in the back of my
head
for like
ever. And we are so good at switching from, you know, use of force, do what we got to do, to back to like, you good, man? Like, let's get you up here in the back of the car.
Right. And we had to help with one night, and I can't remember what apartment I was on Briarfield, but I was walking out from the walkway, and this girl from like the second floor yelled at me, and I looked up. She was like, "Hey, hi, officer." Like, she was really kind. Mm. She's like, "How are you?" I was like, "I'm good." She's like, "You don't remember me, do you?" I was like, "No." She's like, "You arrested me." I was like, "I did." She was like, "You were so nice." I was like, "Okay, thank you."
Yeah, we tend to get the thank yous after the arrest.
So many thank yous.
Thank you. Yes. I was like, "Are you? You know, you're thanking me, right?" Yeah, thank you.
This has been a really good conversation, and I'm really thankful that we were able to hijack the podcast from Chief Weidman today and sit Absolutely. Down and talk together. I love your story about Roadhouse and be nice until it's not, until it's time not to, and then be nice again. Yes. You know, I never knew there was a quote that went along with how I've behaved for 23 years, but that's precisely it.
Yes, you can thank Lieutenant Paula Sheck for that, because that has, ever since she walked into our academy and said that, it has been embedded into my head. And I think that's just how I police, and I have policed since then.
It just does seem very natural to mm-hmm. be kind, right? And caring and helpful to the community, and then it's time not to, and then as soon as the dust settles, it's, oh, can I get you a bottle of water? You know, are you good? Did you need medical attention? And right. it's so easy to transition mm-hmm. back and forth. And even watching the BWCs, I do see women make that transition emotionally faster. That's scientific for sure. Right. As many BWCs as I've seen, it has to be scientific at this point. But you know, I do see women make that transition a lot quicker. So I love that story, and we do get thanked. Thanks for the ticket.
Yes.
Thanks for the arrest.
Thanks for the arrest. Yeah.
And the people at the nightclub that say, "You can arrest me." Do you guys get that one?
Yes.
Too?
Oh, yes.
Arrest me.
Yes.
I work PBR often, and I get that offer a lot.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny.
Right. I wonder what they would actually do if we're like, "Oh, okay," and got our cuffs up to arrest me. They'd probably be like, "Never mind."
No, I was just joking.
Yeah, that was a joke. So.
Well, thank you for joining me. Hopefully we can hijack the podcast again in the future and have an all women's panel and talk about more women's issues. But as we've all three mentioned, I think we are hiring, and we would love to have not only women, but anyone that's interested in law enforcement come join Hampton Police. And so thank you for tuning in to today's episode of Unveiled.
Thanks for joining us for Unveiled, a podcast highlighting the extraordinary men and women of the Hampton Police Division. To learn more, check us out on our social media and at hampton.gov/police.